name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God, amen. Good evening, everybody. I'm very happy to be here and to be invited in this meeting. However, Abuna Daoud, I think, overestimated me, so he gave me very hard topics to talk about, and I wasn't really quite prepared because it was like only 2 days ago. So I'm going to try to do the best as I can. So please pray for me. So can God give me the wisdom not to say anything wrong. The topic tonight is about something called the new tolerance and the moral relativism. And people who work in, like mechanical engineers, for example, they understand what the word tolerance means. In an engineering term, for example, if you have like a coin and you put the coin in like a vending machine to get some soda or whatever, there's something called tolerance. Tolerance means that how much error I can accept in this coin so it will pass the test when I throw it in these vending machines to see if the machine is going to work or not. However, that's not the term that we're going to talk about it tonight, because it has another social meaning. So we're going to start the presentation with some definitions about that. The first definition about tolerance in general, it's a fair, objective, and respectful attitude toward those whose opinions, beliefs, practices, racial or ethnic origin, etc., differ from one's own, freedom from bigotry. What that mean? That mean how much I can tolerate the attitude, the faith, the beliefs of someone else without getting into clashes. And how much I can accept that without changing my beliefs. So I can accept the other's belief, but the key word here is objective, not subjective. So please remember this word, because we're going to talk about it a lot tonight. But what's the difference between the regular tolerance that I can tolerate in a society, different people, different ethnic group, different morality levels, and how that difference between tolerance and the new tolerance? And that's what we need to talk about it. The new tolerance, by definition, is said every individual's beliefs, values, lifestyle, and the perception of the truth claims are equal. There is no hierarchy of truth. Your beliefs and my beliefs are equal, and all the truth are relative. Actually, this is the era we live in right now. There's no such a thing called right and wrong. Everybody's right, but could be everybody's wrong. Does that make any difference? No. Because since everybody's right, there's no any reference point to say who is right and who is wrong. Everybody's right. As far as religion, Buddhist is right, Christianity is right. Maybe this is the only reason it's not right in the Western society now, but Buddhist is right. Hinduism is right. Even what about satanic worshiper? It's still right that they do whatever they want. And when you ask about that, he said, the everlasting questions. Who are you to judge? The problem is, the result of this is who I am is what I do. If you don't accept what I'm doing, you do not accept me. So it became not objective truth or objective behavior, it became subjective. To explain this more, I remember one time I was in one of the colleges giving a seminar for a Coptic club. I was giving a seminar about Trinity. And of course, some Americans were attending. Then one of them came after the seminar, and he told me, "Oh, I never heard this explanation before. That's marvelous. That's amazing. And I love you, church, and stuff. And so I said, oh, great. And then he looked at me and he told me, by the way, I just would like to ask you about something very important. I need your opinion. I told him, sure, go ahead. So he told me, what's your church view about homosexuality? And I looked at him and immediately felt that something behind this question. And the guy told me openly, I'm an open gay and I'm a proud gay. I said, oh, great. So then he looked at me and then he told me, what's your church opinion about this? And I looked at him and I told him about homosexuals or homosexuality. And then he looked at me and then he told me, what's the difference? I told him, it's a big difference. It's a big difference about the objective truth about homosexuality and about you as a homosexual. And he told me, can you explain more? I said, yes. I have no problem with you as a person. I like you as a person. I have no problem to deal with you. I'm accepting you as a person. But I'm not necessarily accepting homosexuality. Then that nice comment about my church, and he told me, is this your church view? I said, this is God's view. It's not my church view, per se. Then, of course, he showed me the other side immediately. You're just a fanatic like everyone else. You just and start back telling me that my church is not nice anymore. You know, it's just as soon as I start to discuss that with him, then my church is not nice anymore and we are fanatic and we don't accept him and we have wrong interpretation about the Bible and so forth. So this is what is the culture we know now. And actually, our kids in America or in Europe or in Australia, they're facing a huge dilemma in the schools about this, especially in the teenage when they have like sexual problems or sexual promiscuity and then like drug addiction or something like that. Sometimes our kids being excluded from the group, and you know how that's very important for a teenage to feel just rejected because he doesn't do or she doesn't do the same thing that this specific group do. And then, you know, they tell him, if you don't do what we do, we cannot accept you as a friend. And that's put a big strain in the relationship with God, church, parents, whatever. The impact or the cost of the new tolerance is the following. For example, if we talk about truth, in ethical theism, truth has been revealed to human by God. In old days, when we have believers, when we have people believe in the Bible, believe in God, they can take God's order as an absolute truth. Whatever God said, it goes. There's no argue. You cannot argue about God's order. Whatever God said, it goes. God said, thus saith the Lord, like the Old Testament said. So when God said something, nobody can discuss what God said. Then we came in a new modernism. Truth can be discerned by reason and logical augmentations. Not everything God said is right. Let us analyze it. Is it scientific or not? For example, like creation. Or other things in the Bible, you know, when you talk about it, people start telling you in a modernism type, no, we can't accept everything in the Bible. We have to argue, we have to prove it. We can't just take it as an absolute truth anymore. This has to change. So we came from, you know, God revealing an absolute truth to now man has to understand and approve God's truth if it is right or not. It get worse. In postmodernism, they said truth does not exist objectively. It is a product of a personal culture. And what that mean? What's right in Egypt is not right in America, and what's right in America is not right in Australia. And this is a huge problem if you become one day a parent in America, and this is the biggest mistake the parents always do. When the kids come and ask for something unusual for Egyptians, They're always telling them, we don't do that. Why we don't do that? Because we're Egyptians. What is the next line the kids were telling them? We're not in Egypt, we're in America. That's good, right? When you lived in Egypt, Dad, but it doesn't fly by here. We're in America, this is different. And of course, I've been in many clashes between parents and kids about this issue. And sometimes the kids come to me and telling me, Abuna, please tell my parents we're not Egyptian anymore. We're born here, we're American, and we live in America, and we abide by the culture here, and whatever they say, it doesn't apply for our daily life routine. And I know Abuna Tadros Malati has a very good answer for this, and he once he gave a lecture for the parents about this issue, and he said, please don't say to your kids we're Egyptian, tell them we are Christian. And this difference between to tell them, you know, we're Christian, and that's not good to do as Christian, not as an Egyptian or an American, it doesn't matter. And I remember one time I was traveling from San Francisco to London, coming to Egypt via London, and then a guy sat next to me, and then he was telling me, the guy was very arrogant to start with, and you know, for me, normally when I go to the plane, the first thing I go in a plane, I sleep before even the plane take off, and just take the time in a plane just to rest. And the guy really banned me from resting for 9 hours, and I about jumped from the plane because it was really bad. I sat down and the guy started conversation. It was never ending conversation for almost 9 hours from San Francisco to London. And he started telling me what, do you believe in this book? And I told him, sir, what book are you referring to exactly? And I know, of course, he meant the Bible, but he can't even say the Bible. He told me, that book. And I told him, well, what book, sir, are you referring to? And then he's telling me, oh, I'm referring to the Bible. I said, you mean the Holy Bible? And I said, you call it holy, I don't. I said, okay, then we're going to have a really nice trip. He was, you know, he started the conversation telling me, Bible is not valid for today's life at all. I told him, maybe that's your opinion, but may I ask why? And he said, I think it was written for Middle Eastern people. And that's why Middle East is a very retarded area. And I look at him, I tell him, you know, he knows, obviously, I'm Egyptian, so he was trying to tell me in a polite way I'm retarded. So I looked at him, and of course, you know, I know that the guy already have a mindset, and he doesn't want to change. So he was telling me that it was only the fact that he said, stated in the Bible, only valid for Middle Eastern people, and it cannot work in America. I told him, okay, it's killing innocent people, valid in America and London or not? And he said, it depends. I told him, what you mean it depends? And he said, everybody do the right thing, whatever they believe. Then we had a long conversation about the objective truth and the subjective truth. That's what I'm going to, you know, elaborate more tonight about. However, human identity, for example, and that's a new tolerance, give us a hint tonight that in ethical theism, humans are both spiritual and material beings created in God's image but fallen because of sin. We understand our identity, who we are, and what we're doing. We are God's image, we are created, you know, in God's image, and live for a purpose of life, to glorify God in our life. Maybe we fall in sin, but we understand that originally we are like an image of God. In modernism, said no, humans are rational, not spiritual. Being who can define their existence according to what senses perceive. I will explain that. You know, there's a lot of people, they think even a spirit is imaginary. And to start even with atheism, that you don't have such a spirit, you know, you're just like an animal. You're a product of a DNA, you're a product of chemicals and a chemical reactions. So you don't have a spirit, you're just an animal. but they said you are a rational animal. Which is a very deceiving word, because when you rationalize things and you have a mind, so you definitely, you're different than an animal. But they said, you know, you're just a rational animal. All what you do is what your senses perceive that make you a human. But you don't have a spirit. In postmodernism, also worse, humans are primarily social beings, product of their culture and environment. I'm defined as a human by the culture and the environment I'm living in. I'm no more than that. It's very degrading, actually, to human life and human being and human image to be just, I'm a product of a culture and environment. So if I'm a product of a bad culture, then I'm a bad person. Simple at that. And the everlasting question is this, who are you to judge? And it's very amazing that sometimes, you know, you go and talk to people, and the only verses they know in the Bible and about Christianity, judge not to be judged. And I said, okay, you just know this only verse in the Bible, what about the whole Bible? And they keep saying that, and if you even stated your opinion about anything in life, you're judging me. And it's happened to our kids again in America. They come home and, you know, if you're wearing something bad or just, you know, hearing bad music or something, and his parents tell him, Habibi, this is bad for you. Who are you to judge me? How do you know? And they start getting in this argument all the time. It's a huge argument that, you know, who are you to judge? And one time we had an interview with a very famous Christian guy who was on a TV, and they were talking about Christian ethics and values. And then the lady, the guy made a remark about Christian, you know, opinion as a Christian about something. Then the interviewer jumped in his throat right away. Sir, with all respect, who are you to judge? So the guy looked at her and he told her this following lines. And he told him, you want to know who I am? I'm going to tell you who I am. The answer is, I certainly do have the right to make a moral judgment. I'm a rational human person who is aware of certain fundamental principles of logical and moral reasoning. I think I'm qualified. Your claim that I have no right to make judgment itself a judgment about me, your claim therefore is self-refuted. So she, of course she didn't, she was silent in a studio, because he told her, you think I'm judging you, but you do the same thing. You just tell me I'm wrong, and who am I, and you make judgment about me without knowing me. Then, actually your question is self-refuted. And she started telling him, no, I didn't mean that. I just to try to understand what you're talking about. And of course she backed off and she couldn't, you know, continue the interview with this guy. This is actually the dilemma we're living in. What is the implication of the new tolerance? The first implication in the West, or in a Western society in general, is the death of the truth. There's nothing now in America or in Europe or in Australia called absolute truth. You can't. You can't say that. When you say the truth about something, you said, don't say the truth, it's facts. See how we play with the word, you know? Just say facts. And I have the right to accept these facts or not. And based on these facts, I'm going to make my judgment to say if it is right or wrong. But you don't have the right to tell me this is true. Based on what? So now we have a very pale view about truth. I remember, you know, there's a movie, I'm sure you remember it, because, you know, it wasn't too recent, I think Few Good Men for Tom Cruise, when he tried to know the truth, and he went to the guy and he told him, I demand to know the truth, and he told him, you cannot handle the truth. And this is true. A lot of people, they can't handle the truth. So, what the best way to do it? Just kill it. Say it does not exist. Because this is easier for me, because I cannot handle the truth. And the big truth I cannot handle, that I'm wrong. So I can't handle this, that somebody told me I'm wrong. So what the best solution? There is no such a thing called truth. It's your truth, it's not my truth. The other implication of the new tolerance is the disappearance of virtues. I was challenging some of the kids and the young youth, and I told them, you know, how many of you can talk in a college about holiness? Can you tell other kids in the school about the term holiness? All the kids laugh at me, call me Abuna, of course not. You know, how if I even say this word in a high school, what the kid is going to do to me? I'm going to be, you know, a target for all kind of humiliation and mockery to the rest of the year. Holiness? Who is holy anymore? You talk about holiness? This does not exist. Courage. Even in a dating game, as we say, talk about honesty. This is bad. Now, even in America, they said there's a bad science. A lot of people lying even in scientific facts, cheating in a result, falsifying issues and article, and it said we got this result just because money directed them. So now, because, you know, there's no such value, that disappearance of the virtues is a result of the new tolerance. One of the other implications is the demise of justice. Now we tell the law in America about how many people will be happy about this law. I can make a law offend majority. So for example, gay marriage, if I have many people telling me that is right and you're going to offend me, then it's become a law. Simple as that. And if somebody, you know, commits like sex offender, abuse kids or whatever, and then they go, but the people demand that they are sick and they need treatment, I can't punish them. They are sick. I give them just a treatment in a jail and get them out. And what happened? They get out, offend more people and abuse more children. Nothing happens. Whereas the whole judicial system is really abused by the new tolerance, because now we have really a dead justice. There's a lot of people start even to perform justice than their own, and we're going to go in anarchy society very soon. The other thing, as an implication of the new tolerance as well, is the loss of conviction. We created a new generation of young people. They cannot convince others about Christianity because they got attacked so bad. I can, you know, let my kids go and be proud of his faith or her faith. If I go in a school and I have Buddhist and I have whatever and I have non-believer and atheist, I cannot have the spirit of conviction. And they read them in a school even, your religion is not the right thing. And maybe it's not right at all. It's everybody's right. And that's have peace of mind. So there's no spirit of conviction that I grow up and I'm very proud of my religion and I feel good about what I believe and I convince others that my belief is right. Another thing, the privatization of faith. Faith now became very private, and we have a very famous case happen in New York a few years ago. A young guy, I think in fourth grade or something like that, during lunch, he came from a very good Christian family. So during lunch, he just put down his head down and he started to have a silent prayer. You know what the punishment? He was dragged to the principal office. The guy rebuked him and chastised him and told him, you know, you can't do that even secretly. And he told him, why? I didn't offend nobody. I'm just praying. And I didn't even pray loud. I just put my head down and I was praying. What's wrong with that? He told him, no, this is a public school. There is a huge separation between religion and the state. You can't even do that. You offend the others. The bad part is this, what about the others when in Ramadan's month they let some others, kids, fasting with them, you know, and share the fasting day with them and telling them, you know, you have to feel the pain of minority. And that's not offensive for Christians or other religion? now. And this is the game, how to tail, you know, faith in certain modes, in certain style, and you cannot even talk about any absolute faith as well. We have a huge problem that the tyranny of the individual. And what that mean? We now follow individuals, not even groups. Very famous story happened that people in a public school, I think in Chicago or somewhere, they got together, and in the graduation, and from high school graduation, they have a poetry that they're going to say proud of themselves and have the word God. And one student, only one student in the whole class, went to her parents and he told him, you know, I have a group in my school, they have the word God. Her parents went and had a case on the Supreme Court and stopped even the ceremony of the graduation. And the school has to delay it. And the Supreme Judge actually overruled the case and he said, omit the word God because it is an offensive word, just to please one single girl in the graduation class. And the whole class have to abide with that, because word God is offensive terminology in the new tolerance. And no one can handle it. And what about others? They said no. So the individual became tyrant, do whatever, you know, who or she wants, and we have to abide with that. Another problems of the implication of the new tolerance, the dominance of feeling. Everything now traded in feelings, not in thinking. Even in the American daily language routine, we don't say anymore, I don't think it's right. Now everybody said what? I don't feel it's right. I think I don't feel it's right, but I feel it's right. And that's not, you know, valid. So to start, you know, dominance of feeling. Even you would like to say anything bad because you offend those and you hurt their feelings. And I remember I was reading an article the other day, and it was a really funny article. They said, what's the difference between the Japanese kids and the American kids? So they said, the Japanese kids, when they have a little child, try to play violin, and he doesn't have the talent, the teacher comes straight out and tells him, you don't have the talent to play the violin, find something else. And the kid knows that he's limited. He cannot play violin, you know. He doesn't have this talent. He has to find something else. And he said in America, the kid doesn't know even any notes, and he plays cacophony music. I tell him, oh, you're great. You're amazing. You're going to be a musician. I put in his mind that he's going to be a great musician. He doesn't even know how to handle even the violin. Because of what? Dominance of feeling. I can't hurt his feeling or her feeling. You know, even if you tell him anything or tell any child anything, now you're hurting my feelings. Because now it is a dominance of feeling. It's not what's right and what's wrong. It dominates, you don't hurt anybody. Another thing, of course, descend into extremes. Few, I think 1996 in Ottawa, Canada, there's a girl who was walking downtown Ottawa, Canada, just walking with her dog. Everything is dandy, fine, nothing, you know, no problem, no difference, anything. Suddenly, the girl decided to take her clothes from stomach and up. She was walking the street topless. And that's never happened before. So what happened? All the kids in the street start to look at her, saying some nasty remarks. At end up, one of them, because of looking to her so badly, he had a car accident, to crash in a car in front of him. The police came immediately and arrested her. Because at that time, she shouldn't walk in the street like this. And she went before the judge and she told him. The judge asked her, you don't think it's extreme to do that? And she said, no. I said, how come? She said, you allowed men to walk naked, half naked in the street. They are topless in the street. Why can't I? Aren't we in a country has an equality between men and women? And if you judge me, then you're a hypocrite. A little girl, 17 years old, telling the judge, you're going to be a hypocrite if you're just telling me, you know, I'm not equal to the man. And guess what? They just told him, you're right. And then became a law in Ottawa that girl can walk half naked in the street and there's nothing wrong and no one can arrest them. And if you talk about this, what the exact word they're going to tell you? You're fanatic. You're not tolerant. Yeah, you have to tolerate that. And this is what we have in the new tolerance. Cost of the new tolerance is bad actually in other ways. For your own info, since 1976 till now, America killed babies in abortion almost four times more than Hitler killed in the Holocaust. The rates of the abortion now in America between 1.5 to 2 million babies per year. Most of the abortion cases, because women or girls unmarried and got into sexual relationship and they are pregnant and they just go and kill the baby. As simple as that. And of course, if you talk about this, what's going to happen? You have to be tolerant. You have to be tolerant. This is a new tolerance. You don't own her body. She owned her body and she can do whatever she wants. It's a pro-choice versus pro-life. And this is what we're facing right now in the world. We're going to focus now about something very important, which is focus on the truth. Because that's the main issue that controls the whole dilemma of the new tolerance. Like Jesus said, I have come into the world to testify to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. And Pilate said to him, what is the truth? And these questions we're going to try to answer tonight about what is the truth. Unfortunately, this word in today's society means the following. The word truth now means true for me and nothing more. We have entered an era of dogmatic skepticism. What that mean? I can argue about your truth. And what's true for me, it's true for me. What's true for you, it's true for you. Since we're not clashing to each other, live and let the other live. That's a new thing, and that's a new era. What about values? What about these things? That's what we are hurting. The value system is going. Says who? If truth cannot be known, then the concept of moral truth become incoherent. Ethics became relative, right and wrong matters of individuals' opinions. Because actually ethics and moral based on truth, based on fact. Well, if there's no facts, if there's no truth, there is no morals, there's no ethics, there's no even hierarchy for morals. Who can say that Mother Teresa and Hitler are bad or worse, or, you know, opposing to each other? In my opinion, you know, they have even a statistics in one of the class in New York. The teacher asked a student, were Hitler right for killing people? And said 25% of the class said, we don't know. Maybe he has his own reason. And the teacher was going crazy and told him, are you trying to tell me what Hitler did in the Holocaust and killing people? You even gonna think about it, if it is right or wrong? They said, yeah, maybe he has other reason we don't know. So we reach to the point now that the people, even simple facts, simple truth, is dogmatic. Let us talk about it. Let us analyze it. Maybe there's hidden reason we don't know anything about. So killing people, abusing kids, gay marriage, whatever, it's okay. We can talk about it because maybe some stuff we don't know. Were you trying to know? No, because you became a very close-minded person and you're not an open-minded person and you're offending other and the dominance of feeling, all the things that we talked about. So, in the end of the day, excuse my language, you shut up, you open your mouth, don't say anything. That's basically what they require us to do. Don't talk. Don't say, don't offend nobody, don't say anything. What about morals, what ethics? It's only in your mind, it's not in others. And pleasure versus our as ethics now, when morality is reduced to personal taste, people exchange the moral questions, what is good, for the pleasure question, what feels good. The problem now is not what's right and what's wrong, as I said, it's what feels good and what brings me pleasure. It doesn't matter right or wrong. And I try to tell the truth about it to justify it, just because it gives me pleasure. And as long as it gives me pleasure, that's all what I want. Right or wrong, it's relative. It's your right. Who are you to judge? You can't open your mouth and you can't say a word. And we are actually going down big time in every aspect. And that's what the moral relativism is. Moral became even relatives. Right and wrong became relatives. There's no such a thing called right and wrong now. And I'm afraid this happened in Egypt as well. You know, it is going to start because a lot of people here in different college and different and American university and German university and whatever university. So all this kind, they start to get influenced by the same philosophy. You know, moral is relativism. It's relative. You don't have an absolute moral to say this is right and this is wrong. Because moral is based on the truth. Right or wrong versus subjective truth and objective truth. For example, I give you a very good example here. Say, one ought not to kill innocent people. One ought to believe that Kansas is in the United States. Both of them, actually, it's a valid truth statement. But they are different. Difference in ought. In oughtness, in the first statement, it's a moral. But in the other line, it's based on knowledge. Could be wrong. Maybe Kansas is not in the United States. I can correct that if it is wrong. But how can I correct somebody come and telling me killing innocent people is not wrong? Well, isn't that what abortion is? You try to convince people that killing innocent baby is wrong. No, it's not wrong. It's my choice. And we have like a very nice statement from John Stuart Mill, his 19th century philosopher. He said, when there's a rational wrong, we correct the error. But when there's a moral wrong, we correct or punish the person. For example, if my kids one day come and he's in a math exam and he told me, I did this wrong problem, I solved it wrong and I'm sorry. All what I can say, okay, you need to know the right answer and you correct it next time. No harm done. It's a scientific issue, no problem. But when we have a problem in morality, how can we fix that? In a dominance of feelings and the demise of justice and the tyranny of the individuals, how are you going to punish a person? The sad part of this, and you guys in apologetics class, you will face this a lot. Main reason of problems with God now, how God allow evil to happen. Right? This is one of the main problems. When you go and even and talk about God, they said, there's no God because there's such evil in the whole world. If there's a God, how can He just control the evil in the whole world? How come I see babies killed? How come I see people raped? Right. But you think really God who did that, or we did it to ourselves? This is what happened. You cannot correct moral judgment. You can't punish even a person because no, even execution for a, you know, for a criminal that who abused 40 babies and killed them after he raped them, you can't object that even. He said, no, he's a sick person, need treatment. You cannot even kill him or just execute him because that's too harsh. Too harsh. What about 40 babies were raped and killed? And what about those parents? And what happened to them? That's not harsh. And of course we did that to ourselves. And then people come and said, how God allow such a thing? And unfortunately God didn't allow that. We did it to ourselves. Because we cannot judge wrong morals. We can't say even this is wrong. We can find a lot of people come and defend wrongdoing now under the new tolerance and moral relativism. Subjective truth and objective truth. Subjective truth as based on an internal preferences and change according to our whims. For example, I love ice cream, I love chocolate, I love sweet chocolate. I can come and give you a lecture about the sweet chocolate, I love it. And maybe I can argue and say, you know, taste of Swiss chocolate in my mouth is better than any chocolate. But that's my personal thing. Chocolate is not an objective. This is subjective. The subject is me. I'm the one who made that judgment if Swiss chocolate is good or bad. And that's different between objective truth. Objective truth, in contrast, are realities in the external world that we discover and cannot be changed by our internal feelings. You can feel from here till tomorrow gay marriage is right, but it is the objective truth is wrong. You can believe from here to tomorrow in your opinion, the subjective truth for yourself, that abortion is right, but does not delete the fact that abortion is a crime and is killing an innocent baby. That's the objective truth. And it does not change if you believe it or not. And the question, the smart question that you may ask, what about God's existence? Is it a subjective truth or an objective truth? The world is trying now to let you believe that the absence of God and denying God's existence is actually an objective truth. But in contrary, is not. It is a subjective truth. It's based on a person believes and a person, you know what? Taste. One of the famous atheists in the whole world, and maybe you studied him in this class or not, his name is Marquis Lesade. Marquis Lesade, that is a French atheist during and after the French Revolution, and to his name related the disease sadism. And he was jailed many times for even killing a prostitute during having relationship with them because he was very, you know, violent. And one time he wrote a book and he said, even if God exists, I don't want him to be exist. Existence of God is against my sensuality. And I don't want him even to be here, even if it is here. Another guy said the same thing, even the idea of having God is terrifying. It's silly. I don't want it. So now atheism became not irrational, it became a will. And that's the difference. So even when we talk about objective truth and subjective truth, testifying for God now, you're trying to make it objective, but when you analyze it and you boil it down, it's a subjective. It's based on a person's feeling. How do I feel about God? Did that change the fact that God exists? Of course not. Because God exists regardless you believe or you don't believe. Moral relativism is a type of subjectivism. And that's true. When morals became relative, it became subjectivism. And we're going to talk about what the moral relativism versus the moral absolutism. Moral absolutism hold that a moral rule is true regardless of whether anyone believes it. It can't be created by personal conviction, nor does it disappear when an individual or culture rejects it. When I am a moral absolutist, that means I know this is right all the time, every time, everywhere, regardless. Does not change the fact that you know it or not. And that's what we're going to try to even implant in our kids' society today. Don't be scared if somebody tells you what you believe is wrong. Because, you know, your belief is right, regardless that other person telling you it is wrong or right. If somebody come and telling you God does not exist, don't be panicked. That's not going to change the fact for what you believe, that God is there and He is there. So that's when I have a moral absolutism, that means I know sex is before marriage is wrong. I'm going to hold to this absolute moral value regardless. You don't want it, you don't want it. But I understand this is wrong all the time, everywhere, in every country, and in every situation. I'm not going to change this. And that's the difference between I became a moral relativist or moral absolutist. Absolutists also hold that moral rules are frequently self-evident in the same way that mathematical truth is self-evident. We don't invent morality, we discover it like we discover multiplication table. What that mean? When I talk about absolute morals, I'm not inventing. I'm not that one who put actually the absolute morals, because the source of absolute moral is who? Is God. One of the evidence that God exists is morality or absolute morals. So I know that God actually give me that moral code, and that's not going to change no matter what. And I understand the more I have a good relationship with God, the more I discover morality and absolute morality. It's not me who invented. When this guy asked me if homosexuality is right or wrong, I told him, that's not my church opinion. That is God's opinion. And that's, you know, when you refer to God, this is an absolute moral. It's not your personal preference, like you like ice cream, you like chocolate. That's not the way it is. Relativism implication on today's society. First thing, of course, as we said, relativism and the law. Law have kept changing in a Western society because of relative morality. Whatever right wasn't right today, whatever right, you know, few centuries or few decades ago is not anymore. Now we can do a lot of things, and now we have to tail the law, as I said, on what basis the people feels about. Another implication, which is the meaning of marriage. Now, of course, for all this gay marriage and homosexual, we try to redefine even the term family. In America now, they have, I think, the past 4 or 5 years, have lawmakers from the Congress and lawyers and sociologists and everybody try to find a new definition for family. Because family is not anymore a man and woman and a kid. That's not anymore. In public school now in America, and my son in the 8th grade, 7th grade, and just like, you know, in the middle of school, but he's in a Christian school. His colleagues in the church in a public school, they give him a pamphlet. You're going to be terrified when I tell you this. They tell the kids even in a 4th and 5th grade, if your friend has 2 moms or 2 dads, that's normal. And I was visiting a family in New Jersey. They are a very good friend of mine, and they have a little daughter. Came and she, you know, telling her mom, they were in a beach, and her best friend walking with 2 moms. So she asked her mom, "How come my friend has 2 moms and I have mom and dad?" And you know, she was telling me, "I don't know. Let's go from here. I, you know, it's enough, it's so cold, let's go home." She told me, you know, I didn't know even what to tell her. She's little kid, very innocent, telling her, how come my friend has 2 moms and I have mom and dad? So now what's the new, you know, implication of relativism in society, let us redefine even the meaning of marriage. Because marriage is not anymore a family, a man, a typical pioneer family, a man, a wife and a husband and have kids. That's not anymore valid in a Western society. And actually it's not even in America, we're late a little bit. And even Europe and Canada, they even went ahead before us and applied all this. And that's really, really sad. Relativism and the meaning of life. Now, everybody's talking about the mercy killing. Somebody is dying and has pain, just kill him. That's better for him. What's the meaning of life? Even, you know, in some area, I was searching in the internet one time and they said, and then there's a website and I said, this website somebody has reported. Guess what this website is saying? An easy way to commit suicide without pain. I don't know if they remove it or not, but this was very scary. Imagine the little kids have a problem or somebody depressed for any reason and going to a website and telling him, oh, we can give you an instruction how to kill yourself without pain. And they give him like some ideas, you know, either pills or you go in a car and turn the car on in the garage and die from the monoxide. That's a lot and less painful, you know, so you didn't have to torture yourself to die. And that is noble because there's no meaning in life anyway. You know, we're like an animal, and we're just a rational animal, and that's great. So there's no problem of just to end your life in any way. And if somebody in a hospital suffering from actually any disease and he has pain, just to give him a lethal injection and end the story. This is my last thing I want to tell you. What is a tactist if you meet somebody, try to play with your head with moral relativism? This is going to be very important for you if you'd like to go for an evangelism or just go in a different country and meet people with this mentality. The first tact is show the contradiction of relativism. What that mean? A lot of people, like I said in the beginning, their discussion is self-refuted. They come and tell you you're wrong. And who are you to tell me, you know this, you can answer back with the same thing. So you have your opinion that I'm wrong? Yes. Then you have to, for me, it's just to have to, yeah, I have to believe you, then you're imposing your opinion on me as well. It's self-refuted. And that's a lot of things. There's always be very tactful how they play people who are just to support moral relativism, that, you know, playing with the word that make you feel threatened and feel, you know, who are you to talk? No, and who are you else, you know, to tell me what to do? It's both ways. Another tact, which is very important, and maybe this is negative a little bit, but they said, press their hot buttons. What that mean? Bring issues of absolute morals or justification. For example, I know a guy one time, he was visiting a student in a dorm, and he's telling him about morals and absolute truth and absolute morality, and he told him, there's no such a thing called absolute morality. And he told him, yeah? And he told him, yeah, there's no such a thing called absolute morality, you know, we can do whatever. He said, okay, goodbye. And while he's walking, he grabbed his cassette radio and took it. And he told him, what are you doing? And I told him, I'm just taking your cassette. Then he told him, but this is mine. I told him, so what? I'd like to enjoy the music in your cassette. And he told him, but that's wrong. And he told him, says who that's wrong? Then everybody's right, and there's no right and wrong. What make you think it's wrong that I take your cassette? That's the way it is. Then when he started thinking about it, he came back and he started to convince him there's no such a thing called, you know, relative things, because what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong. And another thing, a tact to use as well, that force the tolerance issue. They always say, intolerance for the tolerance. What does that mean? You want a tolerance? Why don't you tolerate me? It struck both ways. You want a Christianity to tolerate homosexual? Why can't homosexuals also tolerate Christianity? It worked both sides. So don't being a tyrant and said, you know, my view is right because I can use the same tact for you, and said, also my view is right. Number four, have a ready defense. A lot of atheism actually succeed in an argument because of the lack of knowledge of the believers. The Bible was so right when the Bible said, my people are perishing from the lack of the knowledge. We need to have knowledge. We're in an era that blind faith is not working anymore. You cannot just have that. And there's difference between simple faith and, you know, blind faith. And our faith is not blind. So we need to be very empowered with knowledge, with defense, the tact, how they use their thinking, and we have the philosophy to answer back. And the last thing I would like to tell you too, this is the conclusion of the whole lecture, is what Saint Augustine said. Saint Augustine said something amazing. He said, we must show our scripture not to be in conflict with whatever our critics can demonstrate about the nature of things from reliable sources. So do we give in? So we sacrifice our belief? No! Absolutely no. But as we said, we need to have what we called integration between Bible, between science, the good science, and differentiate between the good science and the bad science, between philosophy. And you know what philosophy? The word philosophy means? It's philosophia. Philo means love, sophia means wisdom, the people who love wisdom. So we get the philosophy from reliable source that really make us love the wisdom, and also integrated with arts, because now, for example, Hollywood became the temple of the new tolerance. Everything in an extreme, everything and under the freedom of speech and freedom of expression that they can do whatever. And let us understand how to establish a Christian worldview that can hold tight the teaching of the Bible, the scientific fact, the good philosophy, and the good art, and make Christian worldview that can opposing the new tolerance and set a new standard of value, morals, and ethic codes. And that's it. Thank you very much. You've been a great audience. Any questions? This question, also the very everlasting question, I heard this many times. What about morality in the Old Testament? God orders to kill innocent people and to kill newborn babies in Moses' story. Isn't that immoral of God? Very harsh word to say that God is immoral. But you have to understand what these people did. As we said, again, this is a very, very good example in an era of the dominance of feelings and not to judge immorality. This question exactly proves what I said. Because these people were labeled with every bad single sin in the whole world. And God would like actually to judge immorality and said, this is wrong, to give us an example between the wages of sin and the wages of righteousness. And we have to understand punishment of bad things is justice, is not immoral. But again, because we're an era of feelings, this is not right. But you don't know what those people did for you to judge God and tell him this is right or wrong. It's the same self-refuted argument.